Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Andrew Hunneke. Our guest this week is House Ag Chairman Glenn Thompson, who joins us to discuss the Farm Bill markup session and what's next for the bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. Producers are feeling a little better about the economy than they were last month. Higher crop prices, especially for corn and soybeans, was the main reason for the improvement, according to the latest Ag Economy Barometer from Purdue University and the CME Group. Some corn prices were up by 6-7% compared to last month, and soybean prices were up 2-3%. The FDA's reorganization to create a unified human foods program has been approved by the Department of Health and Human Services. The program will go into effect on October 1st. FDA says the program will allow them to elevate the importance of nutrition, strengthen state and local partnerships, and fully implement the Food Safety Modernization Act. FDA announced the plans for the program last year, following a report that criticized leadership at the agency following the infant formula shortage response. And finally, both chambers of Congress were in session this week, as House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn Thompson is working to get support for his farm bill that was approved during a markup session last month. Thompson says the first possible chance to vote on the bill on the House floor will be in September. If the bill doesn't pass the House then, it'll have to wait until after the election, because Congress is not scheduled to be in session until then. Four Democrats voted in favor of the bill during the markup, but now the chairman has to focus on getting additional Democratic support while not losing any support from his Republican colleagues. Thompson told us after the markup that he was shocked by the outcome, and he reiterated how happy he was with the process.
Well, I was very pleased. Total 13 and a half hours in the markup. I've been through longer ones. It really reflected the comments on the policy itself within almost all the titles. It was very positive, very bipartisan, which, you know, was really wasn't a surprise because it was built in a very open, transparent, and I like to say tripartisan manner. Republicans and Democrats at the table, but also the voices of American agriculture as I traveled all across the country for a couple years, bringing those voices back to Washington and incorporating their needs into this farm bill. So I was very pleased with the process. It was fairly civil. There was only once I had to kind of gavel things down, and right at the very end, I think people were just getting tired, and just encouraged them to make sure that we finished, showing grace to each other, and that went well. And at the end of the day, we wound up with a bipartisan vote.
And let's talk a little bit more about that. You were able to get four of your Democratic colleagues to sign on and vote for that bill. So just walk us through your process of how that was able to get done.
Well, I think that was done because of the open, transparent process of which I've really managed this for now. Over 3 years, actually. 2 years as ranking member when I really started the process of traveling around the country, and as a chairman, continuing that process, chairing probably 85 different listening sessions, many with both Republican and Democratic colleagues in attendance, participating, bringing everybody to the table. 40 states and one territory over that period of time. And that was the process that we used of which to build a farm bill that American agriculture and American consumers need. There were 40 measures that were really led by just Democrats that I vetted. They put them forward. They really contributed to a strong farm bill that would provide food and our farm and food and national security. And so those 40 measures are part of this bill, Democrat led. And then there are 140 measures that were bipartisan, led by both at least one Republican and one Democrat. I think there were some folks that voted against the bill that, quite frankly, could have gone either way. But there was kind of a heavy influence on them, and I understand the pressures they were facing. We had Senator Stabenow and Secretary Vilsack in the House. Really campaigning to the House Democrats that were on the Agriculture Committee to vote no on the bill, a bill that they helped construct. So I don't understand that over influence and the overreach that they did. But it really put some of my colleagues who are very supportive of the content of the Farm Bill in a tough situation.
When you take a look back at how this process all played out, in terms of policy changes that are in this bill, what is something that you are the most proud of?
Across the board, all 12 titles, starting with Title I, you know, where we really provide the type of investment in terms of commodities to deal with market volatility. There hasn't been an increase in that area for a long time. And that also included giving an opportunity for farmers that don't have base acres to have base acres. That's a huge improvement. But it's all across the title. The conservation investments that we did, honoring that the best type of conservation is locally led, voluntary, incentive-based. What we did in terms of rural broadband, of expansion, not just increasing an investment in that area, but making sure that we did it in the right way.
As the bill continues to proceed, we went through the markup session. Now, you know, the bill will try to get to the House floor. You now have to balance trying to get your GOP colleagues to stay and continue to vote in favor of the bill while also trying to gather more Democratic support for the bill at the same time before it gets to the House floor. How are you going to go about doing that?
On the Democratic side, again, you know, we took 40 measures that were solely Democrat-led, incorporated those 140 that were bipartisan. And on the Republican side, you know, it's working with all the members there to incorporate what they need. I had members from the Rules Committee that brought forth great ideas. I worked with them. We put into that. Working with all the caucuses. I mean, there are at least four members of the Freedom Caucus that serve on the Agriculture Committee. They have been robust supporters of this farm bill and, quite frankly, voted for this farm bill. I think it's important that we get this bill on the House floor, you know, probably as quickly as we can. I also think that would be great for the Senate Democrats. You know, they need to start to do their job. We need to see bill text from them. I'm excited about Senator Stabenow's leadership in the Senate with the Agriculture Committee. And I think the progress and the momentum that we're showing in the House, I think that's good for the Senate.
We'll be right back with more from Chairman Thompson right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. The Rules Committee will have an impact on what amendments will be offered during a farm bill vote on the House floor. Chairman Thompson says there hasn't been any agreements with leadership on those amendments.
We haven't had any discussions like that. I'm open to an open process. I, just as you observed in my management of the markup of the bill, you know, I like regular order. Quite frankly, we will. Amendments will be vetted by the Rules Committee. The ones that are found in order, we will obviously work with those on the House floor. The bad amendments we'll dispense with, quite frankly, we'll defeat. And the good amendments that make them the types of improvements we're looking for to this bill, we'll adopt those. And I'll be proud to be able to manage that process.
If I were to play devil's advocate here a little bit, we did hear from Senator Grassley last week. He didn't really think that there was a chance that this bill might be able to pass on time. So if that is the case, when do you guys decide if there's going to need to be an extension?
Well, I think an extension is a really bad idea. An extension keeps our farmers and ranchers and key stakeholders in rural America and consumers just stuck in the issues and the difficulties and the challenges that they're experiencing right now. And so I, I'm not supportive of an extension. I think we need to get our work done. And that's why I'm looking to get to the House floor. And that's why I'm really looking forward to seeing some bill text out of the Senate and some motivation and some movement out of the Senate. You know, there's a lot of things at risk when we don't do that. One of those is without moving a bill, all of that Inflation Reduction Act conservation dollars, they will continue to go out the door. And when they go out the door, we stand no chance of incorporating that into the baseline so that it could be there for the future of all farm bills for conservation enhancement. And so there's some urgency here that we need to have. And I don't think we should be leaning in any way on an additional extension.
And lastly, you know, we asked you earlier what you were most proud of in terms of this bill, but if there was something that you would have had to do differently throughout this entire process, what would that be?
I'd wish for a little more time to make it to those last 10 states ahead of time. It's not like we didn't have input from those states. I've met with representatives of those states here in Washington. They participate in the public portal. I've worked with many organizations like the Farm Bureau that had, you know, voices at the table from all 50 states and territories. So, you know, I really don't have any regrets leading up to now. I think the process that I used, which was so inclusive, has shown to be so effective, and has given us the farm bill that America needs and American farmers and ranchers, foresters, and quite frankly, consumers need.
Chairman Thompson, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
My pleasure, Andrew. Thank you so much.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion, but first, our Jake Zukowski has more on the ages of American producers in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
The 2022 Census of Agriculture reported 3.4 million agriculture producers, and nearly 1 in 10 of those are now 34 years or younger. Numbers across the country have declined 0.8% from the last census in 2017. This graph shows the number of agriculture producers by age. From 2017 to 2022, the number of producers under 35 years old grew by 3.9%, making up 9% of the producer population. Those aged 35 to 64 declined by 9%, while those aged 65 and older increased by 12.1%. The top states with young agriculture producers as of 2022 are Pennsylvania, Indiana, and North Dakota. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zukowski.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where this week's panel is going to be all about the Farm Bill. Glad to be joined this week by John Weber with Monument Advocacy and Nick Lewandowski with the Kansas Farmers Union. And John, I want to start with you. You know, you've been on multiple farm bills in the past. You spent time in Congressman Dusty Johnson's office. So I just want to kind of get your thoughts about what has come out of the House Ag Committee this time.
Yeah, no farm bill is ever easy. And I think what Chairman Thompson has pulled off is, you know, pretty remarkable given this one's especially challenging with tight margins, new influxes of funding, new funding challenges, and taking, you know, disagreements on policy aside, he's put out, you know, 12 titles worth of policy that give members a reason to vote for a farm bill that we saw with a, you know, strong bipartisan vote coming out of the committee. You know, taking the disagreements aside, you know, he offers certainty on as far as the farm safety net going forward. He offers certainty and a huge win for climate policy advocates who wanted to see that IRA investment reinvested in conservation, but also extended over the baseline. And also, you know, some certainty on the nutrition side by providing a floor and more certainty on, you know, the Thrifty Food Plan. So, you know, he's really threaded the needle. He's been thoughtful about having the policy lead first, and nothing's easy, but I think he should be commended for where he's gotten so far.
And let's talk a little bit more about the next steps for this bill. This bill could possibly get to the House floor. And if it does, Congressman Thompson's going to have to worry about keeping the Republican support for the bill while also trying to get some more Democratic support for the bill to get it to pass the House floor. How do you think he's going to go about doing that?
Yeah, if there was any easy path for any vehicle to get across the floor, I'm not sure what it is. Right now in this Congress. And then, you know, also working against him is just simply the timeline. You know, we are in a presidential election cycle, limited floor days, 12 appropriations bills that the speaker has committed to moving. So there's some real challenges. He can only control what he does out of the committee, but I think it's kind of incumbent on everyone in agriculture to continue to beat the drum of the need. And I think also look to the Senate because, you know, we need to see momentum in both chambers at the same time. And, you know, he's laid out what he's seen, but I think people are really interested to see kind of what kind of combination, you know, Senator Stabenow and Senator Bozeman can put together and put pen to paper and legislative text and see if that could come out of committee and, you know, provide another avenue. There's many, many pathways to getting a farm bill done, but getting, you know, product out of committee is the first step. And it'll be on all of us to continue to champion and talk about the need and how this fits the solutions that we need today.
Nick, bringing you into the discussion here now, what have you heard from producers in your state about this farm bill?
Well, Andrew, as you know, right now, it's a crazy time for farmers. They're getting ready for harvest. You know, wheat harvest will be starting soon here in Kansas. I was just in central Kansas yesterday, and the wheat's really turning. I would imagine they'll be cutting here in the next week or two. But we're also wrapping up planting. So there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of anxiety out in the countryside right now. And that adds to the uncertainty that we're dealing with when it comes to getting a farm bill passed. I know farmers are anxious about that. They want to make sure that there is some certainty to what they do and what they grow. So crop insurance, that farm safety net that John mentioned, with those weather challenges that we're dealing with, because we've seen some significant weather events here across the plains and across the country, frankly, and that adds to that anxiety and that uncertainty. And I think farmers really want to see more of a bipartisan approach. You know, I think we can get there. Only four Democrats voted for the House bill to pass out of committee. We can do better. We can improve on that, and we can get more Democrats. We've just got to work our way back to the middle, I think, when it comes to this future version of the Farm Bill.
We'll be right back with the second half of our panel discussion right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. Nick Lewandowski with the Kansas Farmers Union says he would like to get a farm bill passed this year, but understands the possibility of an extension.
We know that in the back of our minds that that's a possibility. Obviously, of course, the 2018 Farm Bill was extended to September 30th of 2024. That's just right around the corner. And given the challenges of an election year, everybody's back home in their district, they're raising money, they're trying to get votes and all of that. It's a presidential election year, as we all know. So that throws all sorts of challenges in the way of passing a huge piece of legislation like the Farm Bill. But if another extension has to happen, that's okay. We've been there before. It just helps folks to understand that there is that ability to do that again. Hopefully, though, it won't be for very long. You know, maybe a 6-month extension or a few months. I'd hate to see us go into another year, especially with a, if there happens to be an administration change. We can get this done, I think, fairly soon.
And I want to bring you back into the discussion for this, John. Have you seen any evidence so far from either the House or the Senate Ag Committees that they're going to be able to make the progress they need to get a bill passed by the end of the year?
Yeah, I think the House markup was a good first step. And, you know, all these things can come together really, really quickly if the will is there. And, you know, to the point of and the importance of getting it done, look no further than Title II and conservation. You know, going into this discussion, House and Senate Democrats were clear that they wanted those IRA dollars reinvested in conservation, and they got that win. The issue is, as you extend those out, those rescissions of the IRA dollars that are reinvested go away. So you really lose that investment long-term if you wait. And I think as some of those realizations come to fold and there's the will in both chambers to find a landing spot, I think there's a way they can do it. We just need to get pen to paper, and the clock's working against us as we need to show movement and show legislative text and negotiate really in good faith.
And one of those deadlines coming up is the election cycle. It's something that you mentioned, Nick, so I want to throw this last question your way. Do you think that a bill could get done after the election cycle if Congress remains divided? And if so, what do they need to do to get the bill passed?
I do. I think there is hope for that. Certainly after an election's over, a lot of the tension goes away. People feel a little more free to vote certain ways, especially if they're on their way out the door, or if they're moving on to another position or staying where they're at. So I think that's definitely a potential scenario. That's kind of what we have our eye on right now. In fact, just given the challenges of the fact that there isn't a lot of time between now and the election to accomplish something as big as a farm bill. What it's going to take is a more bipartisan approach. We're going to have to see that happen, moving things from where the House Ag Committee moved their bill out, moving things more to the middle. And I think that's where we're going to see the Senate Agriculture Committee come in, because Chairwoman Stabenow has said this time and time again. This is her last farm bill. She's done after November. She's moving out in January. She wants this farm bill. This is part of her legacy. And I think she'll work together well with her colleagues in the Senate, but then again, also her colleagues in the House to make that happen.
Well, there's plenty for us to keep our eyes on here as the Farm Bill process continues. John, Nick, thank you both for joining us.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, our Jake Sikowski shows the areas with the most amount of rented farmland across the country in this week's Map It Out.
39% of U.S. farmland is rented or leased, according to the 2022 Census of Agriculture. The share of rented farmland has stayed relatively stable over the past 50 years, reporting a similar rate to that in 2017. This map shows the percentage of rented farmland by county, including cash rental, share rental, and free rent. Blue areas represent low renting patterns, while green demonstrate counties where rented farmland is high. In 2022, the highest rental rates were along the Mississippi River, as well as in the Corn Belt and the Northern Plains. These areas specialize in cash grains such as rice, corn, soybeans, and wheat, which make up 50% of farmland that is rented. Areas where farms tend to be larger indicate higher rates of farmland rental. Operations with 2,000 acres or more make up 68% of rented farmland. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zukowski.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The next Consumer Price Index comes out Wednesday. Also on Wednesday, USDA will release its World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report, as well as their monthly crop production report. And finally, the International Fresh Produce Association's Washington Conference runs Monday through Wednesday. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Hunneke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.